This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, joined today by Colin Woodall. Colin is CEO, National Cattlemen's Beef Association. I think this is the first time I've been able to sit next to you with CEO on your business card. Congratulations.
Well, thank you, Tony. It is the first time we've had a chance to talk, and this has been a great adventure so far, and looking forward to a lot of great things to come for this association in this new role.
So you're in Denver now with NCBA, which means you've left the excitement of Washington, D.C. Have you been able to adjust to a little different time structure?
What's funny is I tell everybody that one of the things that I notice more than anything else is it just smells better in Denver than it does in the swamp in Washington, D.C. But, you know, you can never really purge the Potomac fever out of your blood. So I'm still very much in the thick of this. And I think that's one of the things that I'm going to bring to this role that previous CEOs have not, is that the comfort of dealing with Washington, D.C., the comfort of engaging in the process, both with Congress in the White House, I think is just going to add even more ability for NCBA to operate at a new level.
And what about the rest of your background? Just the fact that you've grown up and, you know, in and around the industry, that helps as well.
Well, knowing which end of a cow does what goes a long way, you know, Tony, and that's something that I'm always keeping in mind. It's who I'm working for, and a lot of your listeners, folks that are listening to us right now, are folks that I grew up with, that I know, and they're listening, and they're watching, and I know that I need to make sure that I'm keeping them in business.
Let's talk about a win or two or three or five that you got in the past year. This is dealing with trade. These are issues that you really were working pretty hard on Capitol Hill before you moved to Denver. Trade issues, big.
Trade issues are big, and we have to step back just for a moment and remind everybody why it is we trade. Because trade's only about 15% of the overall value that we're receiving right now for every animal. But that 15% is based upon a lot of cuts that we don't eat here in the United States. We don't have Americans going to the local supermarket and picking up a tongue or a liver or a heart or kidneys. It's just not happening. But those products have value in other cultures and other countries. So if we can take the tongue, for example, which is worth about $1 a pound right now, and we can send that to Japan where it's worth $13 to $15, that is a tremendous return on our investment. And that's why NCBA spends so much time on trade, because it's about maximizing the value of the animal. So that's why trade, in particular the Japanese trade deal, was such a huge win for us in 2019, because what it does is it takes the tariff that we were suffering under at 38.5% and it puts it on the same level as all of our competitors. And we know that when we can compete on the same price, we'll always win on taste.
So that's one area. Obviously, South Korea, that's been a big win. You have a phase one deal with China and USMCA.
USMCA is great because it solidifies that relationship between the three countries. When you step back and you look at USMCA, it didn't really give us anything more than what we had in NAFTA. But when you look at what we have with NAFTA, we have two countries, Canada and Mexico, that have historically been two of our top five export markets. So USMCA was about solidifying that and protecting that market moving forward. So we're excited to have that done. Now we're waiting on the Canadians to ratify it, and then we'll be back to business. The big win, the one that really excited us more than anything else, is China. We didn't think that we were going to have the opportunity to get so much out of China. They have dropped their ban on age restrictions. They have dropped their additional animal identification requirements. They dropped the ban on our use of implant hormones, and they are looking at dropping the ban on growth promotants, beta agonists, such as ractopamine. Huge wins for us. We could take that and double our top market, which is right now Japan at $2 billion. We could take China and turn it into a $4 billion market.
Hearing U.S. Trade Representative Chief Ag Negotiator Greg Dowd talk about China and the potential there, he just said, you know, there is so much potential. They are importing beef, and the U.S. gets just a small sliver of that. So this could really be huge.
It could. And when you take into consideration the fact that they need protein because of African swine fever and what it has done decimating their hog herd, and when you also look at the increasing middle class in China, they have more disposable income. And history shows us that when people have more money, the first thing that they do is eat better. They don't buy a car. They don't buy new clothes. They don't buy a house. They eat better, and eat better. Eating better means eating protein. And all we want is the opportunity to be able to get in there and compete. And with this trade deal, we're going to be able to make that happen.
Are there some challenges, though, to educating the consumer on how to eat and use beef? We've heard that's been some of the challenges in the past.
It is a challenge because when you look at China in particular, beef has not been a staple of their diet. So this is new. So we have to show them how to cook it, how to prepare it, the different options that are available. But we had the same challenges when we got into Japan, had the same challenges in South Korea. And right now, Japan and South Korea for 2019 are our number one and number two markets. So it shows that with just a little effort, a little education, we can get over that hump, introduce beef as a part of their staple diet, and be able to sit back and then reap the rewards. So we're excited about the potential here in China.
So is that education process, is that handled through the checkoff? Is that how checkoff funds are used in building demand?
Oh, so great point. The checkoff is always a hotly contested issue within our industry, especially when you look at some of the lawsuits that we're dealing with right now. But trade is a great example of where we are taking these checkoff dollars and we are using them to help develop recipes, to help promote the product, and to work in collaboration with the U.S. Meat Export Federation to be there in country and have cooking demonstrations in the grocery stores, to have U.S. flag branded product in the meat case. It is really exciting to see what that checkoff can do in helping us promote and taking all these collective dollars and leveraging our industry in that promotion and education component.
So we mentioned the checkoff, and there's been a little work going on in the background here, and I think you just touched on it, but what's the latest there?
You have to go back and look at the investment. This is a $1 investment. It's actually a $1 investment based upon what a dollar was worth in 1986, which is really only about 40 cents today. It's returning almost $12 in value to us as an industry and all the promotion work, the education work, both domestic and internationally. But there has been a lawsuit that has challenged that. RCAF, another group within the cattle space, filed that lawsuit. And we received some great news this past week, where the judge has changed his mind, has decided that there are appropriate oversight mechanisms of the state beef councils and the checkoff. And so we do believe that that's a great sign that we can put this nightmare of the litigation behind us and get back to using the checkoff dollars for what they're intended for, and that is the promotion of our product.
Another buzzword that we've heard, now this is across all of ag, sustainability. What are we seeing here?
This is one that's not going to go away. And here you and I were talking at our annual convention in San Antonio, and we had the Secretary of Agriculture come in, and he said the biggest challenge we have for all of agriculture, especially those of us in the cattle business, is this issue of sustainability. It's real easy for us to say, well, this is going to go away. It's a buzzword. Let's just wait it out. That's not going to happen. The Secretary told us that. The consumers asking the questions. Sustainability is on their mind, so we need to make sure that we're answering those questions. So you're going to see more from us as NCBA with a comprehensive sustainability plan to talk about the great story that we have to share. I mean, we can raise the same amount of beef that we did in 1977 with a third fewer cattle, and we did that without activists telling us to, without the government telling us to, without the White House telling us to. So we can continue to sell that story, tell that story, and build on that story, and we can answer these sustainability questions.
So we talk a lot about NCBA, but how important are your state organizations in the role as far as driving policy and making NCBA actually work?
NCBA is nothing without the state cattlemen's associations and the state beef councils. It is the partnership that we have working together that gives all of us more strength. And it also illustrates the grassroots approach that we have as an association. the policies that we have, that we work on, it's not my policy. It is the policy that a lot of times started at a county cattlemen's association, came through Texas cattle feeders, or Texas Southwestern cattle raisers, Oklahoma cattlemen, any of our number of state cattlemen's associations. It gets debated at meetings just like this. And then once all the producers, the members of the association, have the opportunity to vote on it, only then does it become our policy that we implement. And being able to go to Capitol Hill and talk about that gives us more power than most all the other organizations in the cattle space.
And speaking of that, I lost track, but how many times President Trump got up to speak and there was a young lady in a cowboy hat right beside him? That had to be exciting.
Our president, Jennifer Houston, cattle producer from Eastern Tennessee, also runs a livestock market. She was at the White House 12 times over the past year. That is a historic number for us. But what it does is it shows the strength of NCBA. The only reason we made that happen is because we are in Washington every day talking to the White House, building these relationships, and making sure we have that dialogue. When you step back and you throw rocks at people, they're not going to spend a whole lot of time wanting to talk to you. So while we sometimes have our disagreements, we always utilize the opportunity to sit down and talk through them. And because of that, NCBA has been at the table, at the podium, or behind the desk at every signing of every major policy issue that's impacted our industry.
Final one here for you. If we want to keep up with NCBA, what's the best website?
NCBA.org. You can find all the information on the great work we're doing on the checkoff, the great work we're doing on policy, and just our overall philosophy of where we want to take this industry.
Colin, great to see you. Wish you the best.
Thank you, Tony.
Colin Woodall, CEO, National Cattlemen's Beef Association from San Antonio. It's the Agribusiness Report.